Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Murder in the North. I'm Kelby.
And I'm Zach.
And before we get into this week's episode, we just want to say a big thank you to everyone who's listened. We looked right before we started filming today, and we are like 3 plays away from 500 total plays, which is so exciting for us. I think it was a few weeks ago we were going to hit like 100 or something, was it?
Like a few weeks ago, we like just hit 300. And in the last like 2 weeks, we've done over 120.
Yeah, the fact that even one person is taking time out of their day to listen is just really awesome for us, and we just wanted to say a big thank you. I know we say it every week, but truly, thank you so much for listening. Also, if you listen closely in last week's episode, and even maybe once before, if you hear snoring or slight noises in the background, it's more than likely our dog. I was re-listening to our episode last week, and there was a few times where I could hear our dog Hayes snoring, so...
And sir, we don't have the editing tools to take that out.
We do what we can, but we're not professional. So, yeah, I think that's everything. This week, Zach's going to be covering his case, so let's get into it.
So, our case sources this week is a YouTube video by the OPP, a YouTube video by Crime Beat TV, and Toronto CTV News. So, our case this week starts on August 30th in 2010, as there was a car found on Broadway in Orangeville, Ontario.
Ooh.
Kelby's eyes are glowing right now because Orangeville's actually about 20 minutes from us.
I work in Orangeville.
That's true. You do. So Broadway is the main street Kelby actually works on that goes right through the downtown part of Orangeville. Businesses are lined on either side of the street, but on the north side of the street, there's like parking, like kind of like a strip of parking for the people that actually work in the buildings.
I've probably parked there.
You probably have parked there, actually.
Because there's no parking by my place.
Seriously. And your work is on the north side of the street.
Oh, gosh.
But on this particular day, there was actually a car that was found abandoned around 8 a.m. So I actually have a little bit of a relationship with this case because my mom at the time was actually working on the north side, only 3 doors down from where the car was found.
Really?
And on this particular day, she actually went into work early. And this isn't, I didn't actually have this written down. I was talking to my mom about the case a couple days ago, and she remembers that day just like better than she would remember any other day. Because in this particular day, she actually remembers pulling down kind of that little, it's almost like a little alleyway where you park. But she remembers pulling down that alleyway and just feeling creeped out.
Really?
She said in most days she wouldn't do this, but as soon as she got in her office building, because she was the first person in there, she locked it right away.
I have to talk to her after.
Yeah, and within, so then they would actually go out later that day to see police that were surrounded because this car was called in. So the car was actually a Toyota Corolla, and upon investigation, the police would actually find blood on the rear bumper of the trunk, like where it opens. And police would look inside the car, and they would actually find identification. Police looked inside the car to find identification that would belong to Sonia Varashin. This was where they tried to be optimistic. Hopefully she's in a nearby store and she's just parked there for the time being, but they weren't able to find her. So they would go to her house just to do a wellness check on Sonia to make sure that she was okay. But when they got to her home, she wasn't there.
So did someone call the car in, or like how did the police get there?
Yeah, so the car was actually found behind Greenhawk, which is kind of like an equestrian store. And I think it was one of the people from the Greenhawk that called it in.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know for 100%. I just know that it was called in. So the police would go to her house, and as I said, they didn't find her there. So this is where they would actually enter the home, and police described that they would actually find a pretty violent scene that had occurred. So this is when the Orangeville police would actually get in contact with the OPP on what they found. So in most Canadian provinces, they actually have the RCMP, but in, I believe, Newfoundland, Quebec, and Ontario, they actually have provincial police. So this is why I'm going to be talking about the OPP and not so much of the RCMP. Upon the arrival of the police, they would actually find a big blood stain on the step that leads up to her front door. And when they went inside, they described it as a pretty gruesome scene. And at this point, all that they'd known is that they had found an abandoned car with blood on it, her identification, and her house that was in pretty rough shape, also with blood in it.
Oh my God.
Sonia was a 42-year-old pediatrics nurse. She's kind of moved between different hospitals and actually recently just got a job at a pharmaceutical company that she was actually supposed to be at that day that she was reported missing. In an interview with Global News, her mom would actually say that Sonia would normally call her mom at night, except when she had company. And on August 29th, she actually didn't call. Police up to this point didn't know where Sonia was. This is actually when they would find a camera recording from an area where her car was found to actually see a minivan that was speeding through the parking lot. And they would actually find the driver. But as you can probably guess, since we're pretty early into the podcast, they didn't end up finding anything. The person was just going through the area.
So they thought maybe that person had something to do with the case?
Yeah, they were thinking that they might have something to do with the case, but yeah, there was no leads that ended up coming from that. So next, still with no suspects, the police would actually turn to the neighbors. With blood being on the doorstep, they hoped that they had actually heard something or possibly even seen something. And one of the neighbors was actually interviewed by Global, and I guess the police was actually asking if they've seen any kind of strange cars or even if there was like screeching of tires. But this particular neighbor didn't hear anything. But there was a neighbor that actually was a little too distraught to go on to the interview because their niece was over that night and was woken up around 2:30 to screaming. And around 15 minutes later, the sound of a trunk slamming and tires screeching.
And no one called the police?
I guess not.
Oh my goodness.
But you would think that would be like the first thing I would think of, at least, is to call the police.
Yeah. I guess in some situations, people might think they're overreacting too, right?
Yeah. And I know, like, yeah.
I'm thinking back to when we lived in the apartment and that, like, the people stole the car and, like, they were having, like, they were arguing. And I was like, should I call the police? And you're like, no, stay out of it. Until, like, he broke the window of the car.
I remember that. So quick little kind of side story. We were actually in our apartment one day, heard two people arguing, and we were like, I wanted to stay out of it. I don't like confrontation. So the boyfriend that looked to be actually ended up smashing a car window. And so that's when we called the police. Turns out that Kelby called the police, but it actually turned out that both of the cars were stolen.
That's a good thing I did call. Anyway, sorry. Just, I guess this is like, if you feel something in your gut,
you should probably
call the police. Yeah. Worst case scenario, it's nothing. You did your due diligence.
So with this information, police and the family would try to hold on to hope, but were also preparing themselves for the worst case scenario. The police would ask the community to look in their yards. And for those who may not be kind of familiar with Orangeville or the surrounding areas, Orangeville during this time wasn't as developed as it is now, so it was a pretty small, tight-knit community. And some of the areas and some houses actually do have quite a bit of land. And as soon as you get outside of Orangeville, it's pretty rural. So it sounds bad, but you can kind of hide a body almost anywhere.
Yeah, I've noticed too, like when we moved down this way, like I've talked to you about it. There's so much like forestry everywhere in comparison to like London, right? Where it's all like infrastructure.
And like so much forestry and like especially like so much hills. So a lot of places are harder to walk through than others are. So during this time, the police would actually be going down side roads on ATVs, just kind of skimming through the fields, but as well as the ditches. And they would actually have horses going through the fields as well. In one particular clip that I saw, they were actually, the police were going through like rows of corn on horses to look for her.
When you say horses, I think of like the RCMP, not the OPP.
Me too. I was thinking kind of the same thing. Well, you just kind of think Royal Mounted Police.
Yeah. Exactly.
During the search for Sonia, as much as they were looking for Sonia, they were also looking for some missing evidence. This being her comforter to her bed, but also the fitted sheet. And they were both expecting it would kind of stand out because they would believe that it would be covered in blood. But during the search for Sonia, they were also interviewing a lot of the families, but she also had a boyfriend. Her boyfriend's name was Ian. And the last time that Sonia had spoken to her mother, she mentioned that Ian was a little mad. This was because he was actually moving away to England and he was selling his furniture. And from what I can kind of find out about the situation, he really just wasn't going to getting the price that he wanted to. But because he was moving, he was just selling it anyways.
So sorry to backtrack, but you said that they were looking for her comforter and her fitted sheet. So that was not there when they went to do like a wellness check on her.
Correct. That wasn't there. That's okay. Why they were kind of... That's
what I thought, but wanted to clarify. Yep.
No, that's understandable. Ian, from what I could find, was actually divorced and had two kids, but Sonia's mom was believing that he was actually leaving Sonia to get back with his wife, or in this case, his ex-wife. Fast forward 6 days. A man and his dog were going through a walk down Beech Grove Side Road, and I'm actually going to stop here. We actually went through a drive earlier and passed Beech Grove.
I was going to say, I recognize that street.
Yep. This is a walk the man would go on a normal walk with his dog. And so it was kind of a little suspicious when his dog just took off into the bushes. But as he would, he followed the dog. And this is when Sonia Varashin's remains were found. When she was found, the ground was very wet, and I heard it was very hot as well. So this doesn't really work well with DNA. The police were able to take her body to the coroner's, where they were able to find a sample of DNA.
Well, that's good.
It was very small, so they could only get a very minor profile to go off of. The main piece of evidence that the police released during this investigation was that there was an input of a boot print that was found at one of the scenes. They didn't specify on which one, but this would actually be an X shape on the bottom of a work boot. It had been traced back to being sold from Mark's Work Warehouse, and they talked to the one that was actually in Orangeville, and they actually said they would sell hundreds of these a year.
Do you know what the name of the boot was?
I don't know, but it was between a size 10 and an 11. When I saw the boot, me and Kelby actually used to work at Mark's, so we
have like a good relationship to this case, eh?
Seriously. So like when I kind of saw this, I saw the boot and it looked pretty familiar. I don't know what the boot was though.
I wish you knew what it was.
Around this time of the investigation, the family was actually allowed back into the house as it wasn't an active crime scene anymore. The first thing that her mother actually noticed was that her nightgown was missing. As a birthday gift a couple weeks before the attack, Sonia actually spent some money on a nice nightgown for herself. The police wouldn't inform the news of where it was, but informed her mother that she was actually found wearing it.
Really?
This makes her mom think that she was getting ready for bed or was in bed and somebody had attacked her. She doesn't believe that the person had broken in, but had access to the house.
Well, based on what you said earlier, the neighbor's niece, was it, said they heard something at like 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
She probably was sleeping, yeah.
And that's kind of what I was thinking as well. And her mom kind of made a pretty good point that if it was somebody that she would have had to let in, she would have been wearing her house coat to kind of go down wearing. But she was wearing her nightgown instead.
True, yeah, I didn't even think of that. I have a bad feeling about the boyfriend.
So this was all taking place in about August. But this continues into October, when her memorial was held. Actually, over 700 people would show up to show their respects for her. And this is actually including the boyfriend, Ian. Her mom had some suspicion over Ian, as he had actually lived about 4.5 kilometers away from where her body was found. He would take the street to go to work, and she actually thinks that Sonia would have had to take the street to go to his house. During the time that the investigation had been happening, Ian would actually be around the family quite a bit, and her mom kind of described him as always listening and watching. But to be completely honest, in a case like this, I would have been as well. Because right, I'd be trying to find out what happened to the person that I loved.
To me,
hopefully we don't have to do that. The police had interrogated him more than once. And like Ian said, he did move out of the country, but the police had kept in touch with him. And he would actually be cooperative, and the investigator of the case actually would come out and state this. They stated that anyone can be a person of interest unless they were able to prove that they were not either in the country, in jail, or anything else to prove that they weren't there. Things were quiet for about another 8 months, until the family made the tough decision to speak out to the community to ask for any information that they may have that could possibly help with this case. And not too long after, the police would actually give some detail and would say that they had the DNA and it would only be time until they found the person that had done it. It was during this time that her boyfriend was living in England would actually be cleared. In the interview, they actually asked the investigator if they had DNA that could, and enough DNA that could be used to identify the killer. And they stated that they don't want to say that it was the killer's DNA, but that they had DNA and it was enough to use.
Oh, okay. Now I'm confused.
This is kind of when I was getting a little confused as well, because I was kind of thinking the same thing as you, like, it's the boyfriend.
Yeah, I think we've just seen it so often in cases, right? It's usually someone you know.
Exactly. The look for the killer goes for another 4 years. This is when they actually released footage of two men in a gazebo, kind of near where the car was found. And they kind of are sitting there, and next thing you know, they just take off. The men would be found, just like that van was, and they would be cleared. But a lot of the community was wondering, how did this take 4 years to release? I was
thinking the same thing.
And I don't want to kind of sit here and say anything too bad, but living and growing up near Orangeville, we did not hear a lot of good things about the Orangeville police. And I did hear some things that some things in this case were actually mishandled. And the community in this case actually does. They interviewed some people that they showed the video to, and one of the men said it took them 4 years to release this. Why couldn't it have been 4 years earlier? And this goes on for another year, when Sonia's mom would actually come out to a news reporter to state she didn't believe that the case was handled correctly. The police, even 5 years later, haven't stated how she had died yet.
My goodness.
So this is going into about 2015. The family actually doesn't even know. And so I'm going to say this interview actually took place in 2020. And at the point of the interview, the family still had no information. The only thing the family had been told was that she was killed and where she was killed. Where she was found. They would provide no information beyond that. During the global video, they would actually talk to the investigator of the case and would actually ask him, what did they find post-mortem? And he refused to even answer the question, as they didn't want that information released. And as I kind of said before, with this case, this video being posted in 2020, they still had no information. And I don't know up to this point, but from my research, I wasn't able to find an actual cause of death.
So that's it? There's nothing else?
So, like, I still do have more to go on here, but they essentially don't have a cause of death. They have
no information.
They say that they have information, but it would be inappropriate for them to release it, is pretty much exactly what the investigator said.
Interesting.
I was thinking the same thing. Then something in around 2020 would happen that a lot of people didn't expect, and this would actually be an interview with the boyfriend, Ian.
Oh, Ian.
So for the last 10 years, he had been living in England and kind of living like a normal life, but as you can guess, this has actually been following him around. So Ian had left and went back to the UK because he was actually working for a company in the UK, in Canada, but wasn't renewing his contract. So this is actually when he decided to move back to Ian to actually be closer to his kids. They would actually split up a couple months before the murder, but would still occasionally see each other, just trying to make the best out of the remaining time that they had left together. He said that he didn't go over to see her on Sunday because he was actually planning on finishing his packing, but he actually had spoken to her around 9 o'clock that night, and everything was normal. Around this time, Sonia was actually learning French, so she was just going to practice her French. Then he found out that she was missing, and not long after that, that she was murdered. And he actually even talked about how scared he was, because he knew how everybody was going to think. As we said earlier, it's normally the boyfriend or the partner. He went to the point in providing the police everything that they had asked for. A lie detector test, DNA, everything. One thing that they didn't actually ask to see was his house or his laptop. And this is actually something the reporter would ask the investigator. And as you can probably guess, all he had to say was, "We cannot comment." It was around 2012 that he had lost touch with the Verashins. And not long after that, he would actually have to take himself off of social media after receiving messages regarding the murder and online investigators just blaming him. This is following him around everywhere he goes, down to him being pulled into customs when he was going back to Canada, or when he recently got into clay pigeon shooting. When he went to get his gun license, they had to run his name on an Interpol background check, and his name was flagged. He got in contact with the police, who stated his name wasn't on any list. He is since back with his wife and kids are all grown up. But even with it at this time being 10 years since the murder, he still waits for the police to show up to see if anything new has come up. To this day, Sonia's mom doesn't hold on to any hope that the police are going to find who did it. But to this day, the case is cold and still unsolved. With this being said, her brother Viv actually visits the site where her body was found once a week. And will actually, from what I could see, it looks like he brings her flowers as well. She used to do a lot of work at a camp for kids that have epilepsy, and they had recently actually donated a cabin and put her in memory of her. I know this is one case that actually sits kind of over the town of Orangeville, and especially even over the people that have kind of been in the area when this happened. So it kind of really leaves the last question: who killed Sonia?
That is crazy.
And it's kind of like, this is the one case I really wanted to do. And when I first started looking into it, I wasn't sure on how much information I was really going to be able to find. And I was happy that Global did. They did a pretty good job on what they did. There's obviously, growing up around the area, we always hear kind of some of the gossip about what had happened. But then again, it all comes down to it just being gossip.
Right. Yeah, I think it's just so interesting to hear how it's gone on for so long and there's been no information released.
I was very surprised with that because, like, literally everything that the investigator was asked for the most part everything was, sorry, we can't release that information. Like, I was so surprised then.
And how is
there was no cause of death was even released. Like, that's pretty normal for the most part.
And like the closure that the family won't be getting, right? Because of this.
Exactly. Like, and that would be a big thing. Or the boyfriend. Even the boyfriend. And he even said, like, he still holds on to her. He still misses her. Even though it was 10 years ago, he still tries to kind of leave this part of his life behind because it's a hard time. And especially as he even said, most of the time, everyone thinks it's the boyfriend.
I mean, I did.
Right? Oh, I did. Like, I will 100% say I thought so too. But after seeing kind of like the interview with him, I don't really think that anymore. Like, obviously, it's hard to say for sure because it's an interview. We really don't get a good idea to kind of see on how they were. But the police have come out and even said that they have had a lot of interviews with him. He's provided everything that they've asked for. So there's not much more he can really kind of do at this point to prove that it wasn't him, essentially. But then in the end, they have, from what I could find, weak DNA, but they have DNA. Right. So if it matched enough, then he wouldn't have been cleared.
Interesting. Anyone has any information, should they reach out to?
The local police is the first one that they should reach out to, as well as just the OPP in general is another one to reach out to. But with that being said, that is the case on Sonia Vorashin. And we'll be back next week and we'll see you guys next Tuesday.
Stay safe.